Yeah, I was hoping Cliff would be here today. They're not here, but I was thankful for him for teaching last week. I did like saving time. That was great. That I didn't have to do that because that's good. So today, I'm going to see how many more buttons I can push. Hopefully the last week on marriage, because I really want to get to the parenting. This took a lot longer than I thought, but I think this is stuff we've been talking about. So Cliff did a great job on a forced separation. And both of them, even Pastor Kolak, even last week too, they both defined sin. And that was really important because we don't always do that. And I'm glad we did. So that was, it was great. If you guys missed it, just listen to that stuff. I'm not going through that again. I'm going to piggyback off Cliff for a minute. I cannot talk about military force separation. I'm glad you did that. I'm not pretending I can do that. I just want to add to that, like, if we are force separation, I think military is going to be red service members. We need that. And they're going to have families, and they're going to be separated with service. We also have a lot of other situations that maybe are force separation, and maybe they're chosen separation. So I just want to distinguish that. Like, are we choosing separation? Are we forced into it? I'm going to go through that real quickly. Like, I just encourage everyone to think, like, can I do this job where I live? What am I doing for money? Is this worth putting the hole in my family? You know, and that's discussions you have to have with your own family. And then I would also argue one last thing on even taking on shifts on Sundays. What are we doing for money? Are we forced to take the shift on Sunday? Some jobs you are. Some jobs require it, maybe. I also hear an awful lot of things where it's like, I'm picking up these shifts because there's more money or whatever. So consider that also with our in our work, in our work lives. Is this worth what I'm doing, what I'm sacrificing? And then even on normal jobs, we have 40, 50, 60 hours in our workplace. And we have things going on now called a work spouse. I don't know if you guys have heard that term. Mm-hmm. It's a real term. There's my wife actually saw a greeting card for your work spouse. And this is terrible because what you're gonna see in society now, what I've noticed over the years, if we can't change a principle, we change definitions. So we can't, they realize they can't say adultery is bad, like they can't get there yet. But what they're gonna do is they're gonna redefine spouse to allow what they're doing. And most likely, in the best case scenario, that's going to be emotional adultery. And this emotional connection, that's still adultery. And it probably lead to physical adultery, too. But it's just, I was shocked at seeing that. That we're having these work spouses relationships. So even all that extra time, we spend a lot of time away from our spouses, even at work. So keep that in mind as well. And then as far as money and things like that, is it worth it? Ask your kids, how much money do you make? Probably don't know, and they probably don't care. So that's all I'm going to say about that one. Then we're going to move on now to, I'm going to go back to sex and marriage. I didn't know for sure if I was or not. And I want to recognize that we have teens in here and things like that. And I think it's good for them to understand these things and think about these things. I've gotten feedback so far that told me I've never heard this in church. And I want to take a minute to appreciate Pastor Warren. Pastor Warren has never shied away from our topics. The reason I can speak on this is because he's taught on it. So he's done that, but we've been in situations, and a lot of people told me, like, we've never heard these things in church. And then I thought about that longer. If we haven't heard this in church, how much of our parents are talking about this well? So where are our young people hearing this from? If it's not in church, and if it's not from our parents, it's from the internet. So that's kind of why I want to go through one more time. I've got a point to make on this, another button to push. So I'm going to read here 1 Corinthians 7:2-5. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So this is in Scripture. This has been going on since then. Paul was really writing this to a group of people who were withholding sex from their spouses, and I think it was more like this righteousness, like, we're really righteous if we do that. But no matter what, is in Scripture, this is what it's saying. And so before we go there, I'm going to talk about what we established really quickly. First of all, sex is within marriage only. So that was clear. Bible's clear about that. I think most of us understand this is for marriage only, not outside of marriage. Sex is designed and given by God. He created it. He made it. It's not a mystery. He designed it the way it is. It's good. It's pleasurable. God wasn't surprised that it's pleasurable. And then it binds the spouses together. Strengthens your marriage. Okay, that one flesh. Okay, I don't think that is purely metaphorical. I think there's a physicality, a physical sense of this one flesh. And then sex is not to be used as punishment or reward. So that's a combination of things that my wife and I covered over the last couple weeks when we spoke on this. And then it hit me too. Within biblical context, sex is never going to become sinful. I thought about it, like, man, I really like Culver's ice cream. It's not sinful to have Culver's ice cream, but if I have 3, 4, 5 in a week, that can become sinful. God created this for your marriages, and it's not going to be sinful. Enjoy it. Enjoy it all you want, as much as you and your partner want, because it will not become sinful to do that too much, like when I want to have Culver's ice cream too much. Okay? So, my point being with where I'm going right now, what I want to say is if you and your spouses, married couples, are not having sex regularly, why not? That's the question I want to ask, where I want you guys to ask each other. This is not for me. This is for spouses. So before I go here, let's define regularly. That's for you guys. That's for couples, okay? Pastor Warren thought I was crazy with the men when I put out the numbers. But husband and wife, you guys agree on it? That's fine. If you're a husband and a wife, and once every month or so, or a couple times a year, or special occasions, or things like that, you guys are happy with that, fine. I don't have anything for you at that point, but that's fine. If you guys agree on it, no problem. If you do not agree on this, let's talk about why. So here's a perfect thing. If you need a segue into this conversation today, when you drive home from church, ask your spouse, so what do you think about Sunday school today? There's your segue. I hope. Okay? So, let's dig into some ideas. And let's be honest, I mean, this could go in either direction, but a lot of times I think we see in our circles, husbands that are desiring it and wives that are not. But my wife can talk about this too a little bit, but even in the video I showed the men, there's a man who's addicted to porn. His wife was desiring sex with her husband. He was not doing that because of his addiction. But we're not getting into that a lot right now. I'll come back to that in a minute. But let's talk about then possible reasons why not. First of all, there's going to be selfish reasons. I don't feel like it. This should be discussed with your partner. If this is a regular occurrence, you guys are not always going to be on the same page every day, every time. But if this is a regular occurrence, then I think we need to discuss why. If it's constant, especially between a husband and a wife. I think you guys do need to talk about that if you guys are not on the same page. That's just selfish, why not? I don't want to do it. Could be medical reasons. There are medical conditions that prevent this type of thing. They can be painful. There can be other things going on. Talk to a doctor then. Maybe there's help. Maybe there's ways to work around this. I'm tired and have a headache. It's not a medical condition. That goes back up to the selfish category. And then also talk to other people on these subjects. Like, we shouldn't be afraid to have friendships or mentors and things that we can talk about this. Under medical conditions, I mean, are you unhealthy physically? Now, this could be numbers of things. I mean, this could be obesity, this could be skinny and unhealthy. Are you physically unhealthy? I think you have issues here and impacts other parts of your life. And that's lifestyle changes to consider as well. So I talked about, I hate the terms diet and exercise. Diet sounds like you're doing some kind of weird diet thing. When I say diet and exercise, how you eat, how you act, how you're active, how you exercise, makes a big difference. So other than that, then there could be trauma or dysfunction, typically in the past. This is gonna require discussion between husband and wife first. And then I would also encourage people to find other help if that's the case. Other your couples that you can trust, pastors, Christian therapists. There's things out there rather than just ignoring it. That's been kind of a theme for this whole series on your timeline. Like, deal with your past and things that you are dealing with that you're bringing into your marriage. So if there is some kind of dysfunction or trauma with it, talk about it, get help, seek help. My wife and I are never going to be scared to talk to anybody about this if they want to come to us and or other people that you trust. You may have a distorted relationship with sex. So maybe you don't enjoy it or you don't like it, but I think that's a distorted relationship with it. God created this to be a good thing. God created it to be pleasurable. If you don't like it, I think there's something wrong. And two, that's something to figure out with your spouse. And again, there's other people to help you along those lines and figure out why don't you like it. So I'm going to try to say this as diplomatically and politically correct as possible. Especially for us, God created our anatomies, right? Male and female. Doctors, scientists have determined there is a part of a female body that is only there for one purpose, and that is pleasure. It has no other function than that. That's only true of women. We don't see that in men. I'm no anatomy expert, but from what I've read so far, that is true. Okay? He put it there for that reason only, so why aren't we enjoying it? That's the way he created it. So, the reason I do all that is this should not be taboo. This should not be uncomfortable to talk about. Discuss these things together. Discuss them with other people, pastors, Christian therapist, something, if you are struggling with this case. You guys got to figure out what regular is for you. That could be one or two times a week. It could be two or three, four or five, whatever it is. But I do think that if it's limited, you're talking less than per week, you're talking by month or less, talk to each other because that's probably not, you're probably not on the same page at that point. You know, it should not be special occasions or my birthday or our anniversary or something like that. Okay, so I hope I didn't offend too many people like that. So after all of that, 1 Corinthians 7, 8, and 9, I'm not going to get there yet. So I'm going to go back to the first scripture I read. Aside from all this, now that we said, the Bible is clear. If you are only sex with yourself, it is a sin. It's a sinful behavior. Call it for what it is. And you may not necessarily think I am withholding. Maybe it's not even the thought that that's what's going on. So my encouragement is to figure this out, discuss this with your spouse, figure out your relationship with this, because ultimately this is for the better of your marriage, and it's what God gave you, and it makes you guys closer together. So I don't feel like it, selfish and sinful. I don't enjoy it, selfish, disobedient, sinful. Figure out why you're not enjoying it. Satan uses this to tear apart our families. Satan wants to tear families apart. And this is a very great tool. Satan uses sex numbers of ways for his purposes, outside of marriage and inside of marriage. These are tools of Satan. We can take it away from God's design. So, 1 Corinthians 7, 8, and 9. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it's better to marry than to burn with passion. I think, unfortunately, in our circles, we have marriages that are burning with passion anyways. If you do not have this figured out, you guys are not on the same page here. So my question would be, do you not want your spouse to desire you? Is there something wrong that your spouse wants you? My wife loves that I desire her. My passion is for my wife. And she likes that. So I introduced this scenario with the men a long time ago. I'm only going to bring it up briefly now. We see, because I'm not going to get on the subject of porn, but it is part of this. The scenario would be a man making porn and a wife that won't have sex with him. Vicious cycle. There could be multiple factors going on. So then you say, well, which one is it? The chicken or the egg? Which came first? What's the problem? So it's a subject we should all talk about in another scenario, I think, with men and women. But at least this is for the women's benefit. The men have heard it. Most of the time, the men have brought this into the marriage. Most men have been introduced to this around 10, 11, 12 years old. Most of them are bringing this into their marriage. So it's not that they got married and now your husband has a porn problem. Most of it had happened before your marriage, before you knew your husband, if this is going on. So, men, I give you no excuse to use porn or have any other lust or desires, no matter what. Your wife is having sex with you or not. Porn is not okay. Porn is not an alternative. Porn is not the answer. So I will never condone that usage, no matter what. But women, what do you want your husband to desire? Do you want your husband to desire you? It is healthy that your husband does desire you. And do you want him looking somewhere else? Again, I will never condone that behavior. This is a 50-50 thing, unfortunately. It's very difficult to figure out. Everybody's circumstances are different, but we need to talk about it. Even though it's hard to talk about, I want us to talk about it. My wife can tell you, I mean, women have issues with porn as well. You want to tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about it, how that looks different than us? I didn't prepare her for this. That's why she's looking at me wide-eyed. But you have best insight on it.
I'm just saying porn is on the rise with women. And with the books, and you and your kids read How Hoover, Magazine, Honors, all of that stuff is porn in a book. Movies, all that kind of stuff. So when you go into marriage, you are expecting these things that are not reality. And so I think that affects. I don't think it's necessary, I don't like it. It's just, this is not what I'm reading or seeing.
Right. The expectation
right.
is out of whack. And I think women.
I mean, if you are not aware, porn is huge rise amongst women.
Right.
Not in the point of what men are watching, but what women, the books they're reading, the movies they're watching. Mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey, that's an old one, I understand that, but that was very popular amongst Christian women.
Mm-hmm. And there is even a number of women rising that are into hardcore pornography that we consider was a men's problem. Women are doing that now as well. That's rising, but it's this fantasy, this misconception, this misperception of sex and relationships and love that's going on for women as well. So that can contribute to this issue. So to sum this up, it kind of goes back to the whole purpose of this series in our marriage, but even on the subject of sex, selfless, serving, sacrificial love. Same thing for marriage, love, everything we've talked about. Sex is not selfish. Sex is not for you alone. It's not whether I want to or not at the time. This is also part of serving and loving your spouse. So that's to wrap that up. That's as far as I'm going to go with that. If anybody needs to talk to somebody about this, my wife and I are not afraid. And I'm sure there's people, pastors in this room that can help. But don't be afraid. And then also, if you feel the need, ask your spouse, what do you think of Sunday school this morning? So, on from this now to where we left off last was going to be the last point of marriage to be conflict resolution. So, and I think we'll have time to finish, then we'll be on parenting finally after that. But I showed this last week. I love this. So this is about conflict. I think there's some truth in here. It's fun.
I think the thing I love about my marriage the most is like we argue really well. Right in the heat of it, we'll be like, and I'm like, this is healthy. Like, we've both been to therapy, so we know how to argue. Like, I've learned that I have to acknowledge your feelings, which that's a big one. You know, I used to just argue about the facts like an idiot. It's not what it's about, all right? It's about facts and how she feels about them. And like an idiot, I was there like, I never said that. And my therapist helped me out. My therapist was like, have you ever just tried acknowledging your feelings? I was like, why would I do that? And not saying like, why would I acknowledge your feelings ever, but in an argument, that's not feelings time. That's how my brain works. There's facts time, and then there's feelings time. And I didn't know that those two intermingle, you know? Like for me, feelings time is on the couch where I'm like, oh, I love you. I love our life. And then argument time is, I never said that. That's not what I said. I can be honest with you, it works. It works. Like, I acknowledge your feelings, so I know how to argue. Like, she was like, but you said, and then I was like, I'm so sorry I made you feel that way. That must feel horrible to feel that way. And I feel awful that I had any part in making you feel that way. And she's like, thank you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's it works. And then I was like, but for the record, I never said that. All I've really done is I've moved the apology from the back to the front. And then we can have the regular argument after the fact. But that, I've noticed that really helps.
So, I think there's a truth in that. Men and women, the together, but I mean, there's going to be conflict. And actually, I'm going to do this in the middle of it now. This article I talked about last time I was here, I did read this back here. It's a great article on sex and marriage. So I don't forget, I'll put it there. About six copies got picked up last time, so I had some left over. I encourage you guys to read that one if anybody is interested. Great, great article on that. So anyways, so back to this conflict. I'm going to read.
I think the thing I love about my...
I'm going to read this whole section of 1 Corinthians 13. Most people call this the love chapter. I'm going to read all this, and then we're going to talk about why. So, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith, but remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, if I deliver up my body, burn, but have not love, I gain nothing. For love is patient and kind. Love is not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide. These three, but the greatest of these is love. So I think this is, first of all, it has nothing to do with marriage, first of all, in the context, but I think this is important because this really solves, actually probably avoids any conflict. If you look at this, what we're supposed to be doing when we love our spouse. And I should be very familiar with this because anytime we do have conflict, my wife quotes this to me. So I should have this memorized. Notice nothing on here is a feeling or an emotion. Scripture does not, as far as I know, really does not command emotions. It commands actions, things we should be doing. So this goes through that whole misconception of love. Love is not a feeling. You don't fall in love and just feel this love for somebody. It's an action, it's a verb, it's a choice. That's the big difference between Christianity and what the world is telling you right now. But then you fall in love and you fall out of love. And you can't fall out of love if you're serving and loving your spouse with what Scripture is telling you. So use these principles to love your spouse. It's very hard to have knockdown, drag-out fights. So that there's tons of verses on this. I'm going to read through a few. Ephesians 4:31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Philippians 2:3. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Proverbs 19:11. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. James 1:19 through 20. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So none of these verses are related to marriage right away. But why don't we apply these to our spouse? So I know I had a tendency to get the quickest, most angry with my wife than other people. Like, I don't know why we do that. I think it's true in a lot of situations. I think it's because that should be the closest person to us, the safest person to us. But I tell you, I was the quickest to not do any of these verses with my wife first. So I want to say, you know, why do we do that? Let's focus these kind of things. If you treat your spouse this way, you're going to do much better in marriage. But let's say you failed up to that point. We've ignored all of that, and now we're fighting. Okay? So a couple of things while you guys are in disagreement. What's going to happen? The biggest key for me is fairly new, something that we've learned over the years. Oh my gosh, we're on the same team. And that's sounds like a cliche, right? Like, why are, you know, we hear that all the time. But we are on the same team. We should be husband and wife working against the enemy. The enemy is Satan. Satan is trying to tear families down, trying to tear spouses apart, trying to tear kids and families away from each other. So we are on the same team working against the enemy. Your spouse is never your enemy. No matter what has gone wrong, no matter what has happened, your spouse is not the enemy. Your spouse's problems are your problems. They are not your spouse's problems, and I can't believe you have these problems and you have to deal with this. Whatever it is, you are doing this together. So we are never opposing each other. Even if we are in disagreement on how to get somewhere or how to handle something, we are on the same team, but it's much more than just the cliche. Okay, we learned this actually at a conference. I don't even remember the detail. It's not important. Nobody should know. We got invited to a marriage conference shortly after our marriage really turned around. But honestly, a couple had invited a couple to receive them to a marriage conference, and unfortunately, that couple did not make it in time to get to that conference. So they offered them to us. We're like, okay. And we had kind of just made some turning points. We were actually on a good path. And actually, it was a really good conference. Marriage, what's it called? Marriage, oh gosh, it was associated with Focus on the Family. Marriage, I don't remember anymore. Yeah, what was it?
A Weekend to Remember.
Yeah, and it's a great thing. I'm sure they probably still do it. And even though I thought our marriage was pretty good at the time, it was a very good conference. And if you are struggling, it is a very good conference as well. Point being, we learned that here, use I statements, not you statements. Because it's very easy, kind of like our video, you did this, you did that, you did this. Okay. Focus on what you've done. I statements, I feel this way, this is how I feel about what's going on, not you need to do this or you're wrong. Now I'm going to give you some stuff coming from a man's perspective. Kind of looked at that video. I do encourage to keep it about facts. For men, I mean, for me, that I feel a similar way on some of the stuff that was in that video. Keep it about the facts. Once you change the facts or add like unstable emotions, like, it's very hard for me. Like, I'm out at that point. It's very hard for me to stay involved in an argument or in a discussion if we change what's going on or change the facts. Exactly. Uh-huh. And, you know, my wife and I discussed that for a second. Because I initially had said, like, emotions. Like, when you add a lot of emotion, that's difficult for me as a man. But emotion's okay. But unstable emotion is different. Changing the heart. The whole point that I want to make with this, hopefully I get there, is like, I need to see, for me, I want to work towards the goal. I want to make this path towards the resolution, towards the fix here. I want to work towards it. As long as I see us going towards it, I'm fine. If we start changing the target, changing what's going on, changing facts, or even it's like an endless cycle, like, hey, I almost got to the solution, and then we just brought up a different problem. Like, wait, we were almost there. I almost had it. When you did this, wait, if we just keep, it's like, if I see I'm never going to get to the end, I tell you, ladies, I'm out. And it's, I'm not justifying my situation either. Like, I'm not saying that's the right approach. I'm just trying to see the both sides of the story. Hopefully my wife can give you some input too. Yeah.
I had to realize we were going to hit the same goal, mm-hmm. just not the same way.
Right. Exactly. That's what you need to know. That's as long as, and I, me personally, as long as I see that, I'm good. We can work at this. We can do this. As long as we know we're going at the same goal in the same direction. If you start making it a moving target, it'll be very hard for me. What's your thoughts on me? Come on.
Nothing.
So anyways, moving on from that, avoid the endless circles, I said that. Admit your responsibility in the situation. That's hard for me. You know, we always want to think we're always right, and my perspective is right. And I used to think, like, if I could just get my wife to understand my perspective, she's going to understand I'm right. That's foolish. Understand my responsibility in the situation. You have to first admit that to yourself, which can be very hard to do. Understand, okay, what did I do wrong here? What could have possibly, even if it's a misconception, what did I do wrong? What part do I have in this? What is my responsibility in this? And then you have to understand, and then acknowledge that with your spouse and take responsibility for your actions. After that, realize I can't control my spouse from there. I can only acknowledge and apologize for what I've done, for what I'm responsible for. I can't control my wife, my spouse's reaction from there. So I think a lot of this boils down to control. We want our spouse to react a certain way, behave a certain way, or do certain actions when we're in these situations. Very hard for me to do, but I've had to realize, like, I can control myself. I can control how I respond. I can control how I react. I can control how I apologize. I cannot make my spouse apologize. I cannot force her to do anything or act a certain way or react a certain way. So I can do my part, and then I have to let that be what it is. I think we a lot of times want to be, I'm not satisfied until I've gotten my spouse to do something. And sometimes I just need a little space for a second, too. Like, things, our emotions are up, things are heated. Like, let things cool down for a second. My wife hates that. She wants to do it, fix it right now, no matter what. So sometimes it just takes a second for things to cool off. I haven't heard this in years, but it used to be, not let the sun go down your wrath, so we're arguing all night. 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning, can't let the sun go down. I'm like, the sun's been down. The sun's been gone a long time. I don't think that's what this verse is. I think we can go to bed. So I think a lot of it can really boil down to control. Like, we want to control our spouse, control the other person. So, overarching theme, really, all of this in marriage, and everything we've talked about, this goes into sex, marriage, anything. Selfless serving, sacrificial love. It's just true of any part of marriage. And it's a love that desires the best and better for the other person. Not the love that desires the best for myself. A selfish love. It is a serving love. Set yourself aside. If you guys want to fight over who can outdo you with love. Who can love each other more? In a biblical love. Love each other more. And so, I mean, when you set yourself aside, I've just learned this very recently, guys, so I'm not trying to be brag on myself here, but sometimes it's just like that. My wife would come at me with something, you know, hey, try to prepare Sunday schools on marriage and see what happens. And but you know what? It's like, I had to realize, wait a minute, this probably isn't about me. We have stresses, we have things going on. I am not going to react to that. And it's not such a problem. And again, some of that is control. So here's a little thing I found, and I would change one part of this, but this thing says a happy marriage is a selfless journey in which the happiness of another person is essential to your own. I think that's pretty accurate, except for happiness. Like, I would change that to, I didn't sign it through yet. But one thing I would think, instead of happiness, for the better, the happiness is good, it's a fine thing. For the better of someone else. Somebody else is better than your own. So to wrap up, really, we hear I'm sure you've heard these stories, like somebody goes up to an old couple, hey, what's the key to a great marriage? You guys have been married for 40, 50 years. Then the standard response is like communication. That's what I hear a lot. Oh, you guys got to be able to communicate.
I think that's good.
But to be honest, to understand and give sacrificial love, I think would be much more important. To have a love that desires the better for your spouse, to have a love that is not for your good, but for your spouse, that'll change your marriage. Because I think nowadays we are just too preoccupied with what's good for me. What do I get out of this situation? What do I get out of marriage? And that's why we end up where we are. So for the first time in history, I'm done a little bit early. Are there any questions on any of this? Questions, thoughts? My wife's not in here. That means you want to say something. All right. Last chance. All right. Well, hold this in front of us.
Dear Lord, I thank you for another opportunity here for Sunday morning, Lord, for church together,
and we can be in your presence, Lord. I just thank you for the people here. Thank you for your word and your instructions, Lord, on marriage and sex and just everything that you want for us. I pray for our marriages, and I just pray that we can your will and your design in them, Lord, and then I just pray that people who need help will seek help from other Christians or from pastors or from counselors.
counselors, and that, that we can just resist Satan and his goals and his work for our marriages to be honored to you. In Jesus' name.
I do have two pair of red boxing gloves like this. When I told my wife that my daughter managed to play, you know, I was going to beat the tire out of her, she has this little squirt.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I was going to say, you know, when an argument over the fight